Hey, everybody. If you're on listening to us on the internet, my name is Win Free, and this is a live call tonight. And as you know, if you've been checking in, we do unusual things on this line. And if you're checking in for the first time, the theme is interdimensional communication, tapping into energies from other realms and bringing them into this realm. And this call is always a simulcast with a conference line and the internet. What you're hearing right now is the conference line people coming in. And we're going to officially start in about 5 minutes. And in the meantime, you can listen to people checking into the conference line. Here we go.
All callers are muted.
Just a moment.
All callers are unmuted.
Hello, everyone.
Hello. Hey, welcome, everybody.
Hello.
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 Rita, Babylon, New York. Hello, everybody.
Hi, Rita. Welcome to the call.
Christopher Scarnoa, Babylon, New York.
Yeah, hi, Christopher. Welcome to the call.
From Wisconsin.
Yeah, hi. This is Don from Superior, right?
Yep.
All right. Welcome back, Don.
Thanks.
Jim from Irvine.
Yeah, hi, Jim. Welcome to the call. How are you doing?
It's Mike from Los Angeles.
Good evening, Mike. Welcome to the call.
This is Willow Morning Sky from Riverside.
Yeah, hi, Willow. Welcome to the call.
Oh, thank you.
Hello.
Hi, Janice.
Willow, can we steal your name?
Yes, you may. With my blessing.
Hi, Janice. Welcome to the call.
Phil, hello.
Good evening, Phil. Welcome to the call.
Thank you.
Good evening, Tom.
Lori from
Hume, California. There's two people with the one from California. Say your name again, please.
Carolyn.
Hello, Carolyn.
Hello.
Kathy, Sacramento.
It is Kathy. Hi, Kathy.
Yes. Hi.
Welcome to the call.
Mary, I'm Olivet.
Thank you.
I heard Mary, Emily, and Olivet.
Yes.
Welcome to the call, both of you.
Thank you.
Connie from Santa Fe.
Hello, Connie. Welcome to the call.
Shirley from Mississauga.
Hello, Shirley.
Hmm.
Thank you for being here.
Lori.
Hello.
Is it Lori?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Lori.
Hi.
Hi, Mike. From San Mateo, California.
Hello. Welcome to the call.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Kathy in Sacramento, California.
Hello, Kathy.
Hi. How are you?
Hey. Good. How are you?
Good.
Hi, it's Chris from Anchorage.
Hello, Chris. Welcome to the call.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Good, thanks. I think I hear Chris from Memphis. Is that correct? I might be wrong.
Susan in Delaware.
Hello, Susan.
With her mother, Jane, three-wayed in Maryland.
All right. Hello, Susan and Jane. Welcome to the call.
Thank you. Welcome to the call.
Good evening. Welcome.
What's your name?
Allison from British Columbia.
Is it Allison?
What's that?
Yes, Allison from British Columbia.
Hello, Allison. Welcome to the call.
Jane from Washington.
Hello, Jane.
Yeah, that's me. I can't imagine all this going on.
Yeah. Hello, Michael from Atlanta.
Hello, Michael. Thank you for being here.
I called in Sunday night at 6. I missed it. It was in the morning at 10.
All right. Hey,
I couldn't get through on that call. Was it full or something?
No.
Nope.
I'll touch on that in just a second. Did I hear
something goofy?
Did I hear Michael from Atlanta?
Yes.
Michael, have you been checking into our calls for a bit, or did you hear us from George Norrie?
Yes, I did.
You know, the reason I'm saying that, send me an email. Just a moment. Wait a second, Michael. Send me an email and just say Michael from Atlanta, because Daphne is feeling lonely in Stone Mountain. And we thought some of the people in Atlanta area, they want to go have lunch with her.
So oh, what? Good.
Hey, Glenn, it's Katie in Atlanta. Count me in.
All right.
Daphne. Stop, Katie.
Anyone else?
Alice in Boston. Hello, Alice.
Hey. And Katie, don't forget to send an email to Win, all right?
I will do that, hi.
All right. Just for the letter.
Hello, Lisa.
Oh, hello.
I know you're here.
Diana from Elmville, New York.
Hello, Diana. I'm welcome to the call.
Thank you.
And those who have not done so, and if you want to say your name, please feel free to do so.
Hi, Susan from California.
Yeah, hi, Susan.
Steve from Flagstaff.
Hi, Steve. How are you doing?
Great. There. I'm a grandfather as of this morning.
Sure. Oh, yay!
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Mr. Laws,
I
haven't heard tonight. About an hour or two.
Boy or girl?
A girl.
Oh, there you go.
Congratulations, man.
You must have taken a lot of hard work on your part.
No, actually, he's my, yeah. The father is my stepson, so I only raised him from the age 3. So,
that's enough time.
All the hard work.
Well, Rock, I'm going to call. If you want to do so, please say your name and location.
Brian from Nebraska.
Hello, welcome to the call.
Zoe from New Jersey.
Good evening. Welcome to the call.
And you know what? I'm gonna. Can you hear me? You can hear me, right?
Yes, Ren.
I'm gonna do a mute here.
Your input is invalid.
Virginia.
Hi, Terry. Welcome to the call.
Hi, and I hope baby's in. All callers are muted and they can unmute themselves.
Terry, I'm just sorry we muted you in the middle of your sentence. Let me mute all those things.
Entry and exit chimes are off.
And if we're lucky, we have Terry on the line, right? Hello, Terry.
We just checked in. Somebody named Terry. Are you calling me or that one we just checked in?
No, everyone's muted now, and it's like 6:04, so we're getting close to starting, okay?
Okay.
And I'm just checking if you're here, and Daphne is here, right? Hello, Daphne?
Daphne, sir.
Okay. And
Daphne sounded in the background for me.
Yeah, well, she was speaking far away from her mic, I think. So, you know, we've been having, last week was okay, and the week before was miserable. So I'm kind of like doing something new today and trying to take some of the responsibility of putting everyone together from BBS, and we're doing this call on Skype to BBS. So it might work better, I hope. So,
recording.
Let's see. Recording. Okay, thank you.
To start conference recording, press 1. To return to this conference is being recorded.
This is Monday at 6:05 p.m. Pacific time in Sedona, Arizona, and we welcome everybody who's on our conference line. We welcome everyone who's listening on BBS. And, you know, we've been calling this the Winfrey conference line. And it just started that way. And it's really not the Winfrey conference line. I'm just the guy that sticks his foot out the furthest. But we have two people who are co-creators that I'm just a straight man for the voices that come through them. But the other neat thing is that as some of you are learning, there's a very unusual energy on the calls. We don't emphasize that energy on Monday or Wednesday, not usually. We do on Sunday. And the testimonials from the people that come into our Sunday call are through the roof, because it's this unusual experience, and we go through it. You have to be there to understand it. It's hard to put it in words, and it's even kind of unbelievable to put it in words. But there's this idea that we're talking to these two group souls that are able to send energy into this realm, and that by asking for their presence, they show up. And because of doing this for 10 years, probably it was somewhere around the fifth year, I started to feel that energy. I didn't feel it, but I didn't identify it if it was there. It's kind of subtle. It's kind of not like hits you over the head. It's not like somebody sits down next to you, some ET, and says, "Hi, Wynn, we're here," and da-da-da-da-da. It's an energy that starts to connect with your energy, and it's so seamless that it feels like part of you. And if we didn't watch it carefully, and if I didn't point it out, then it would be really easy to miss, because it's subtle. And when I say it's subtle, it's not always subtle for everyone. I get emails from people that are having all kinds of wild experiences while they're on this line. And you're seeing lights, feeling energies, they put things in the light, and people get healings. And I'm not doing any of this other than showing up. And neither is Daphne and Terry. And this was like a learning curve when I suddenly realized that these voices that were answering my questions, and I should say the Elohim book, the Creator God book, was all channeled before we ever did a conference call. And when I was thinking, actually, I remember what was in my mindset when I first started writing it. And, you know, we had a number of experiences. We had done a number of sessions, both with Daphne and Terry, and it was probably like, maybe 2 years into this, and I'm really saying to myself, I keep saying it, are they really who they say they are? How do I know who they say they are? Well, we had the healing of my sister, we had different phenomena, but it was still not easy to believe that the story was so crazy that these two women kept tapping me on the shoulder and saying, "Those guys want to talk to you again." And I'm talking to a source that says they created the physical universe. That was very hard to believe. It was too, you know, you would think if something, I would have thought if something like that was happening, there would be bells and whistles and trumpets, and I'd get led to the throne of God with bunches of angels all around. I mean, that's what I would have mocked up. Instead, I'm driving somewhere with Daphne. She's like complaining about how hot it is. In the middle of it, she'll say, "They want to talk to you again." And I had been taking a tape recorder with me. I pull it out, put it on record. And they never lectured me. They never said, "Do this." They just said, "Ask us questions." And I started to see that they were leading me down a path so that I could prove to myself they were who they said they were. Initially, I wondered, why did they say they're the Elohim? You know, the Elohim is a loaded word, and normally, I would automatically mistrust anyone, you know, that said, "I'm channeling Jesus." I mean, they could be, but nonetheless, I don't want to give up my power. You don't want to give up your power. Nobody wants to give up their power. And when you get a loaded word like Elohim, which you Google it and you find out the name for God in the Old Testament, well, I had to just keep testing it and testing it. And it was probably 2 years into it, 2003, 2004, that I said to myself, if they really are who they say they are, I'm going to ask a series of questions that people would want to know the answers to, about how things work between realms. And that began the series of questions that became the Creator God book, the Creator Gods of the Physical Universe. And I was pretty amazed at the quality of the answers. And it just kept saying, geez, I think they might be who they say they are. And, of course, you who are reading the book are probably, on some level, saying there's a certain sense of unreality to it, that it can't be real that we could actually be on a phone line and we're having conversations with these sources, and it's so casual. It's not casual is not the best word. It's informal. It's informal because part of it is because I'm informal. I don't want to... There's a sacred aspect to it. There's a way that people are responding that just blows me away, the emails I receive. But nonetheless, we don't have any bells and whistles and trumpets, and it seems really authentic. So I decided that this evening, on this call, I was going to share a little bit about the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, which was all happening preliminary to my having this experience. And I'm going to open the lines on the conference call for just a moment. Try to be quiet because it's going to open up a lot of noise here.
All callers are muted. All callers are unmuted.
Uh-oh. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
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 Quick question. How many of you ever read an Edgar Cayce book? How many of you followed David Wilcock?
Yeah, I have.
Okay. And how many of you are good Roman Catholics?
How many of you
are Jewish? One Jew. There's got to be more than one Jew in there.
Oh yes, we all are.
Just being shy.
Exactly, we all are.
Who has a cat that's meowing in the background?
That would be me.
Okay. What's your cat's name? What's your cat's name?
Lucas.
Lucas. All right. Hi, Lucas.
He's 17.
Wow. Okay. Good. Do we have any
Mormon? Yeah, I got a Mormon right here.
Okay. And
I'm Quaker.
And you're a Quaker. Okay.
And I'm a Mormon.
You're a Mormon.
I'm spiritual.
Well, you know what? And how many of you are spiritual?
We all
are.
All right. Okay.
Everyone.
Well, thank you so much for sharing.
Even the dog. The dog.
All right. What's the dog?
Lucas doing an invitation.
What's the dog?
Can you call yourself a humanist?
What's the dog's name?
That's Fluffy.
Fluffy. Now, Fluffy, I just want to make sure he doesn't chase cats, does he?
whenever she can, she actually does.
Well, those of you that have cats on the line, look out for an astral dog.
Lucas.
Lucas, right? All right. Okay. Anybody want to say anything before I mute you all?
When? Can I put in a special prayer for my nephew, Christopher? Yeah, his appendix removed 9 days ago. Tonight, he's a very service to others person, and tonight he tried to help his brother move, and he threw up 3 times within the last hour.
Okay.
So I'd like to put out a special prayer for him.
You know what we've been doing that's working? And I'll add this towards the end of the call, is... because there's so many people that would like that. and it really has been working to do it silently. I mean, it's...
All callers are muted and they can unmute themselves.
You know, what happens is, on these calls, we have these group souls. They, you know, this is stuff I tell people, don't believe this. I'll tell you how it looks to me. Because you have to prove it to yourself, not believe it because I say so. We have these group souls that want to make a difference on our planet. And their criteria is they have to be asked. Now, a lot of times we think of that as far away. But those of you who are coming in, particularly on our Sunday calls, have learned they can move right into your space, right on this call. Some of you feel it, and you know it couldn't be an accident. And they can hear your thoughts, but they don't violate your free will, so they're not going to do this unless you ask. You're open. And so towards the end of the call, we will have a moment of silence, as we're starting to do every Sunday now, even more than once, so everyone can... Now, this is not prayer in the normal way. I don't like the word prayer. I don't, even though you can see how easily this could be become thought of as prayer. And if you want to use prayer, it's fine with me. But this is like non-religious. This is experiential. There is, if you keep coming into these calls, they are as real as you and I. And they're telepathic. They can tune into us. You know, I don't want to say this. If you follow me up on this, let me tell you, be prepared for a 4 or 5 week wait. Because I don't, if I talk about this, we can't handle it. We got so many responses. But I've watched now, we have done many, many readings for people. And it is amazing how specific they can look at someone and see their conflicts, see what they need to hear. It's not a psychic reading. And if you want a psychic reading, you go somewhere else. It's a reading where that you're giving them permission, essentially, to tune into your soul, and they look at what is blocking you. And I'm telling you, when readings come in, this is the truth. I said, oh, my God, another reading. But I'll also tell you that I am sure, pretty sure, that there's going to come the point where we don't have time to do readings. And the response I get from people, most people, is awesome. And it's like, I'm just sitting there, and I don't know the answers to these questions. And Terry looks, and she says, oh, my God, what are they going to say? And how they go in and untangle some of the most sophisticated problems and help people go through them. Now, the thing about it is they don't fix you. You co-create with them. The universe is one being, and these group souls are part of the oneness, just as you're part of the oneness. And, in fact, many of you used to be them, okay? You came into this realm either because you were curious, because you wanted to help, you knew it was in trouble. And in most cases, people get lost almost all the time. I certainly was lost most of my life. I mean, I had a lot of phenomenal experiences when I was younger, and I didn't know how to integrate them. And, you know, there's all these reality systems in this realm. And why do you get lost when you come in from a higher realm? Because once you're here, you don't remember that you came in from a higher realm. And you start to define yourself by the people around you. And so you choose certain parents, and you define yourself by those parents. What did Jesus say? He said the sins of the parents are visited upon the children. I think I wouldn't say the word sins. I would say the distortions, the contractions, the hang-ups. Because there's a level of judgment in the word sin. And one of the things is, most people do the best they can with what they know. So when somebody is a screw-up, when they're selfish, when they're operating out of fear, when they're acquisitive, many times they had a lifetime where they starved to death, and they're just scared of that happening again. So that's why judgment, non-judgment, is so important, because people do things and they don't even understand the repercussions of it, except you and I are the repercussions of those people, and we end up screwed up, and then we have to untangle ourselves, particularly if you're a wanderer or if you came in from a higher dimension. You would, like, it's like, where am I? You come here, everything is so dense, where everything used to be loving, everything is tough, and people are mean, and you get rejected. Now, that's not true for all of you. And the thing about this realm, when you get strong enough in your connection to the higher realms, your own reality starts to recreate itself, and you attract new people, you attract new opportunities, and people respond to your new vibration. So the challenge is to have to learn how to hold those vibrations. And my hope is, by doing these conference calls and putting this out so consistently, that it gives you an opportunity that might not have been there without this. And particularly since these group souls are not just on this call, you can take them home with you, you can join Team Shift, you can have a call every day with five people to get to know each other, because I'm sure many of you have had the experience that once you move into these new ideas and these new ways of looking at things, and everyone around you is in a contracted space, you can't talk about it, or you'll get ostracized. People think you're crazy. So once you actually learn to hold the frequencies, you no longer need people to talk about it with. You become kind of a stable repeater station of the higher realms. And you change the vibrations of those people around you. You don't change them. They change themselves. But by holding the space, you give people the opportunity to go through shifts. And you're suddenly able to be actually a loving person. And so that's my hope, that these calls and these conversations help all of you grow into that. And I honor those people. There's people that are already there. In fact, they're like turnkey. And this call just they start coming into these calls, and it's like they're off like an express train. They know how to do it, and they suddenly realize they're not crazy, because they look crazy, or they think they're crazy, because no one else is like them. So I was going to talk about Edgar Cayce, David Wilcock, and myself. And background is, Edgar Cayce was the first person, I think, to inspire me to the idea that there's more to life than meets the eye. For many years of my life, I was I would have said I was an agnostic. I didn't know what to believe. I said, it's got to prove itself to me. And somehow or another, I started reading some Edgar Cayce books, probably when I was in Berkeley in college. And I read them, and I said, this guy couldn't be a fake. This guy had to do what he said he was doing. And now there's this voice coming through him, and of course, if you're not completely familiar with Edgar Cayce, for 40 years of his life, he would go into a trance, people would ask him questions, and he demonstrated the most remarkable abilities that I'm not sure anyone has ever demonstrated with such consistency before or since. Because it started out, and he started being able to diagnose people's health. And he could be so accurate that it was like they had a medical examination. He could tell them what their blood pressure was, their white blood count, all these things, and they would go to the doctor, and it would always be confirmed. And then he could tell them they had their specific health issues, and they would go to the doctor, and it was confirmed. Now, for the first 20 years of his life, he only did health readings. He never did reincarnation readings. Do you know why that is? The reason is because whoever was talking through Edgar Cayce knew that Edgar Cayce was a fundamentalist Christian, and that if they came on too strong and too far out, he would have been scared about what he was doing, and he would have dumped it. He would have been scared that it was something demonic speaking through him. So it was only after 20 years where he had thousands of people that he had helped. And not only was he diagnosing things, he was recommending alternative remedies that no one had ever used before. And once he started talking about reincarnation, then he had a group formed around him that was kind of protecting his energy, monitoring it. He started talking about how the universe works and how people move around to different places in the universe and different experiences. And Edgar Cayce's source, whoever was talking through him, never specifically said who they were. In fact, oftentimes, they seem to indicate that they were part of, the Christ. And they would refer to Jesus in a very holy way as they gave their readings through Edgar Cayce. And in the reincarnation readings that Edgar Cayce did, there was a whole history of people, the whole group of people, that had histories in different past lives. There was a group that had past lives in Atlantis. There was a group that had past lives at the time of Jesus. There was a group that had past lives in the Old Testament, and they were identified. And so when he died, authors would go through these readings, many of them thinking they were going to prove him to be a fraud, and they would say, wow, this is real. And then they started compiling books about different periods, epic times, based on the past lives people had in those times. So there's a book called Edgar Cayce on Atlantis, Edgar Cayce on Jesus, Edgar Cayce on attitudes and emotions, Edgar Cayce on alternative remedies. In fact, 500 books were written about Edgar Cayce after he died. And of course, many of you discovered Edgar Cayce and said, wow, this is amazing. And it was amazing for me, and it put me on a spiritual path. And one of the things that happened when I first ran into David Wilcock is I had to really make my connection that he was Edgar Cayce. Now, some people have a problem with David having been Cayce, and I should say a former incarnation. Cayce was no one is ever the same from one life to the next. Every life is its own painting. And oftentimes, the way your life unfolds kind of depends on people you meet who connect with you in a past life. So, for example, you could have a lifetime, and you could be very spiritual, and you have a past life track where maybe you were a bank robber. And the next life, when you're young, you meet some of your buddies that you were bank robbers with, you become friends, and you end up becoming a bank robber again because that's, unless you have a very strong sense of ethics and and spiritual connection, oftentimes people can go from one extreme to the other, just depending on who they meet. And in Edgar Cayce's situation, prior to being Edgar Cayce, he was, according to his readings, he was a gambler and a womanizer, and he used psychic powers for his own advantage. And his name was John Bainbridge. And so now you have John Bainbridge that in his next lifetime becomes Edgar Cayce. And how is it that a guy who had such service to self aspects suddenly becomes the world's most famous sleeping prophet? Now, I asked myself that, and I said, you know what? When Cayce was young, he was hypnotized. And when he was hypnotized, this voice spoke through him, and it started to seem to indicate it wasn't Cayce. And the hypnotist became very fascinated, and that was the beginning of Edgar Cayce's channeling. And the rest of his life, slowly but surely, became dedicated to that. And so you can see how the flow goes from one life to the next. And why was he channeling? Why did Edgar Cayce have this ability to channel when most of us don't? And how did that come about? Well, if you study Edgar Cayce, you find out that Edgar Cayce had a past lifetime before John Bainbridge. Many of his past lifetimes were indicated in the Cayce materials, but he had a past lifetime as an Egyptian high priest by the name of Ra-Ta. And Ra-Ta, according to the Edgar Cayce readings, was building pyramids by levitation, was doing healings. There was a whole bunch in the Edgar Cayce material on Ra-Ta, and the time given was 10,500 B.C. And in the Edgar Cayce readings, it was also indicated that Ra-Ta became known through Egypt as Ra, the sun god. Now, most people never read that in Edgar Cayce, but I read so much stuff, I was like trying to uncover, I kept saying to myself, there must be clues here to something, because how is this guy doing this? Who's talking through him? And I couldn't dismiss it so easily to say, well, it's the Christ. What is the Christ? I was brought up Jewish. I didn't have a relationship with the idea of Jesus when I was young. And so I was just in a inquisitive mode when I was reading Edgar Cayce and reading all this stuff about Ra-Ta. And when I ran into David Wilcock, and I can tell you, the thing, it's always interesting how people get introduced to something, and because usually especially when something is really significant, it seems like a coincidence, but there's usually some sense of cosmic movement that brings things together. And I had learned that a long time ago. And by the way, you know, Edgar Cayce, I said this earlier, but I want to reiterate it, never knew he was talking to a group soul. Now, maybe he wasn't, but that's my take on it. I'm going to tell you how I proved that to myself, or convinced myself, at least to have a predisposition to that. Well, I got an email from a guy I've known for many, many years. In fact, it's a guy that has been on coast to coast, and I knew him probably 35 years ago when we were both musicians and we met in New York City and he was singing at a bar. And we actually have very different points of view now, but we've maintained a connection over many years. And you may have heard him on Coast to Coast. His name was Michael Horn, and he happens to be the media representative of the Pleiadians, Billy Mayer. Now, I don't follow Billy Mayer, and I haven't check that out to say I think that's positive. But nonetheless, it's probably a valid ET contact, whether it's positive or not. And Michael is their media representative. And I lost track of Michael for many years. I didn't know he was the media representative for Billy Mayer. All I know is, sometime in 1999, I got an email from Michael telling me that this article that was in Rents about Sai Baba having sex with his disciples. Now, Sai Baba is this Indian guru that many people think of as God, or an expression of God. And I remember years ago at people talking about Sai Baba, so I clicked on the link to see who wrote that email, and it was an article in Rents, and I end up, guess where, on David Wilcox's website. And there's this little section on his website where he says he has a resonance with Edgar Cayce. Now, he never said he was the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. He said he had a resonance, and he told the story of why he had a resonance. And it was a very compelling story. Well, needless to say, because of my background in Edgar Cayce, I glommed on and started reading everything on his website, all his channelings. He, at that time, he was not presenting himself in the way he's presenting himself now. He was presenting himself as a channel. And then he wrote articles about, you know, it was kind of mixed. He was putting together his scientific presentation. He was making online books called Convergence. But it was filled with channelings and predictions. And he was probably 27 years old, and he'd have headlines on his website like, Wilcox has another psychic kit, and blah, 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 blah. Well, I studied enough of him to be convinced that he was Edgar Cayce. Now, I'll tell you a couple of the things that tied David to Cayce. David was living in New Paltz, New York. He had graduated school, and by the way, spokesperson, so I try not to make any opinions about anything he's doing now, anything other than the book. And if I do, I don't. It's my opinion, and it's not what David would say. Okay, so I want to be sure I clarify that. He was living in New York. He was studying metaphysical things. He was studying ETs, and somebody recommended him this idea of writing his dreams down. And there was something called a dream voice that that person experienced, and they were getting communications in their dreams. So David started that, and he started getting messages in his dreams. And he was fascinated by it. And every night he'd have a tape recorder or however way he did it, and kept getting more little sentence fragments. And if you read The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, there's a whole chapter that is dedicated to those initial sentence fragments that David was getting. And then he started reading about channeling, and he wanted to get better at it. He was only getting sentences. Oh, the thing that really caught his attention at that time was they made a prediction of something that was going to happen to him on a certain day and a certain time, and it happened. And the prediction was, you're going to receive, I'm not going to get the dimensions right, 3-inch by 11-inch sheet of paper on Friday morning at 10:30. And Friday morning at 10:30, David was driving, stopped him, and he got a ticket. And so he became really, really hooked on these messages at that point. And so he got from the place where he was just writing down a sentence at a time to where he could write paragraphs and pages. And by the time I discovered him, his website was filled with pages and pages of these messages. And one of the things that immediately became apparent to me was the wisdom that was in all these messages, because it was incredible. It was they were looking at people from such a depth of place. And sometime a year into getting these messages, David had a communication from his dream voice that asked them to move to Virginia Beach. They said that would be beneficial. And Virginia Beach was the place where Edgar Cayce Foundation existed, and the place where Edgar Cayce lived, I believe, when he died and was doing his work there. Well, David, of course, knew about Edgar Cayce, but he didn't initially not even consider that he was the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. And he went to Virginia Beach, moved there, and people started stopping him on the street because of his resemblance to Edgar Cayce. And finally, he did a channeling, and he asked his source, "Why do I look like Edgar Cayce?" And the answer was, "Because you were Edgar Cayce. And if you study Edgar Cayce, you'll see all the parallels. But this lifetime, if you're going to do your highest purpose, you're not going to do past life readings and health readings. We would like you to be a public figure and bring this understanding of the shift to the masses." Well, David kind of freaked out at that point, and he started studying Edgar Cayce. And he found that there were a number of amazing things connecting him to Edgar Cayce. First of all, his astrology chart. Five planets were in the same sign as Edgar Cayce's. One chance in 260,000. Second of all, not only was he the spitting image of a young Edgar Cayce, his father looked like Edgar Cayce's father, and his friend looked like Edgar Cayce's wife. And then, as he was studying the Cayce readings, he found out there was a reading in Cayce's material where Cayce said he was going to return in 1998, live in Virginia Beach, and maybe the liberator of the world. Now, it was November 1997 that David went to Virginia Beach, and they told him they wanted him to be a public figure and bring the information regarding this shift to the planet. And now it looks like this source that was speaking through Edgar Cayce was now setting David up. In other words, they predicted he was going to return. They start talking to him, and somewhere when he starts taking them seriously, they tell him, go to Virginia Beach. And he had no idea of this prophecy, any of this. And it all started to unfold. And the kinds of, if you study Cayce and you read the Wilcock readings, you'll definitely see the parallels. The book, The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, is probably half the book is readings from that period of time. And the readings were giving incredible wisdom and guidance on how to cope, how to survive, how to spiritually grow in this shift. Now, the group that was talking through Wilcock identified themselves to Wilcock. Wilcock didn't have the stipulations of Cayce with regard to being a fundamental Christian. So they explained to him that they were a group soul. And Wilcock, now I'm not sure of the timeline here. They called themselves the Ra Group. And there was another woman who channeled the Ra Group in 1981 through 84. And those of you who are on our calls know that at least once a month, Carla is my guest. And She has 4 books out, which you can get on Amazon, or if you search the internet, you can find them for free, called Ra, The Law of One. And she had a PhD partner who was asking questions for 5 years to this voice that came through her that said they were the Ra group. And David was giving her huge amounts of acknowledgement in his work. So I began a pretty thorough study of Carla Ruckert's work. And I found something that absolutely blew me away, which is probably the one fact that gave me the motivation to finish The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. I mean, that was a really amazing task to take on because, first of all, I never wrote a book before. I was writing songs, I was writing poems, and, you know, I have 4 planets in Gemini, so to get focused enough to write a book that's going to withstand the scrutiny of people was one heck of a challenge of discipline for me. And I'll tell you why I did it, what motivated me. That is, the first thing was, as I was studying Carla Ruckert's material, and this group soul was explaining itself to us through her, they said that they came upon a high priest in Egypt that they had an affinity with, and that they worked with that high priest to build the pyramids by levitation. And the time period was 10,500 B.C. And when I discovered that, I fell off the chair because I said, they've got to be talking about Edgar Cayce. And Edgar Cayce talked about that same past life, 10,500 B.C., but he never referred to a group soul. And Carla Ruckert never referred to the name Edgar Cayce. They just said he was a high priest. But through Carla Ruckert and her Ra channelings, there was another very important piece of information that was not in Edgar Cayce stuff. And that was that the priests of that time took the work the Ra group was doing to, and the way it would be described is they were trying to change the template of the planet, of the negative, to bring new energy, new possibilities here. And there were negative groups that were working to keep everything just the way it was, or even worse, as many of you know, they could be called the Illuminati now. So the priest at the time, according to Carla Ruckert, took the work of the Ra group and this high priest and attempted to use it in self-serving ways to control the masses. And they kept it secret. And they kept the masses on a string. And as I started to read in between the lines, this was all the beginnings of a huge entree into negative beings in the other realms that became what is now the Illuminati. And that all through the history of Egypt, this was the case. There was one attempt to try to turn this around. And according to Carla Ruckert, there was an Egyptian pharaoh whose wife was channeling, and he outlawed all of the traditional religions. And he became really unpopular. And eventually, he was overthrown, his city was taken over, and no one knows what happened to him. In fact, the history of him was lost for thousands of years until there was some excavation a couple hundred years ago. And according to a lot of things I studied, that particular pharaoh who was connected and getting messages from the Ra group was being used in their plan to bring a being into this realm who could hold the symbolism for the masses and lift. I'm getting emotional here. Lift the consciousness. Excuse me. It's like this stuff reaches me on a deep level. So Akhenaten was creating enlightened beings who he would send out of his city to live in the caves, who became the Essenes, because they were planning to bring Jesus in. And the Essenes were the group that was going to the Kachanal that could hold a high intent that would make sure Jesus discovered his mission. You see, how does someone discover a mission? Everyone goes blank in this realm when they get a body. They don't know why they're here. And so these scenes were part of the preparation for Jesus. So, as you can see, here is this group soul that is working really, really diligently to shift the consciousness of this planet. And they start out with Ra-Ta, 10,500 BC. And in fact, they probably were working with Atlantis. There was the law of the children of the Law of One and the sons of Belial, if you read Edgar Casey. And if you'll notice, the Law of One is the Ra group's trademark. They use it all through anywhere that they speak. So, Carla Rucker, Ra, the Law of One, the idea that the universe is one energy. And so, we have the Ra group starting in Egypt, and their work gets taken over by the negative. They make an attempt through an Egyptian pharaoh to turn it around, and although it's unsuccessful, they do start the Essenes. And then Jesus comes in, and of course, the thing that makes this realm so tricky and so hard to figure out is that any time somebody comes in who is representing what I believe to be the positive up there, in their track, other people start channeling the negative, and they get the information that sounds exactly or similar to what the real person was doing. For example, if you look through Egyptian history, there was a god that was called Amun-Ra. Amun-Ra was not the Ra group. Amun-Ra was, it would be like, you know, today somebody is very innovative and then other people just knock them off and try to make yourself sound like them. Amun-Ra was the negative version of Ra. And Amun was the moon god. And the moon is reflective light. The Ra was the sun god. Now, was it the sun god? I asked that question. It was because at that time, the sun was as big an expansion as anyone could have in their hologram in this realm. That's no longer true, but it was then. And the negative had picked it up, and they tried to fix it with Akhenaten, and they did bring Jesus in, and Jesus was, if I have it right, the Ra group was who Jesus called Father. They were playing that part. And I started to get into that realization when I was writing the reincarnation of Edgar Casey. And I said, oh my God, if I have this right, I'm writing a book. It's the current message of who Jesus called Father. And I wasn't sure of that, but I considered the possibility. And then there were a couple, at least a couple of Wilcox channelings that seemed to imply that. Now remember, you can't believe channelings. You've got to look at this as an overarching picture to see what's true. So there was, one of the channelings was, we came to you, this is a paraphrase, we came to you in Christianity, but we don't often speak in those terms anymore because of the way religion screwed it up. That's a slight paraphrase, but that's kind of it. And part of the Sunday conference calls was developed out of a little statement from the Ra group where they said, send your energy up to us through the crown chakra, and we will send it back in vibrations of love and light. And it was part of that sentence. I said, I wonder if this is true. And Terry and I were writing the book. I was writing it, but Terry and I were editing it. And we would go into these little coffee shops in Pasadena, and we would be reading those channelings aloud in the coffee shops. And the whole vibration in the coffee shop changed. You know, normally, if you're going to go into a coffee shop and be there for 8 hours, people look at you and say, when are you leaving? We would be there for 8 hours, and they would say, when are you coming back? Because there was this magical energy. And then there was this little line that was in the book. There were a lot of little things like, as you study us, we study you. And I started to maybe just postulate, do you think that energy could be the Ra group coming in? And that was probably happening before I met Daphne, before I started talking to the Elohim group. And you can, I'm sharing this, you can see how crazy it all felt as that was going on. And, you know, when The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce was published and released in 2004, David really had an aversion to being publicly identified as Edgar Cayce. He decided, this is my take, I think this is what went on in him, he decided that emphasizing the science of transformation and the history of ancient civilizations was a better way to reach the masses than being a channel. And judging by the results, he was right. Of course, he had a best-selling book last year that became a New York Times bestseller. And, of course, millions of people are paying attention to him now. Now, I'm not going to, comment or make an opinion on what he's doing now, because we went our separate ways after the book was published, and he decided his way of bringing himself out into the world, and he certainly has gotten a lot of people paying attention to him, but I haven't studied it enough, and we haven't stayed connected enough to know, to say that I can endorse that. But I can certainly endorse the period of time that he was channeling, and that I was learning about the Ra group, and this group soul that is made up of graduates of this realm that has been tracking us for millenniums, trying to get through the web of the negative in order to create a transformation in this realm. And that is some of the history of this. And I wanted to make sure, since we've talked about the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, on my website, intelligent-infinity, there's a whole little page on that where you can reach it, access it directly by returnofedgar.com. And you can buy the book from Amazon for only $12.37 or something like that. And if you click on the link on that page, I think we make 50 cents, so it's not a big deal. But also there's an option to buy it directly from us for $25, in which case I include this very rare channeling that I did with the rock group, or what said they were the rock group, speaking through David in 2003, where I asked questions about the shift. And I think it's a 45-minute audio. We did it over the phone, and that's included with the book if you get it on the website for $25. So I really encourage you to get the book. And even if you get it from Amazon, if you understand, the Ra group is so wise. They've spent millions of years being in this realm, and they know the way things go down here. And they're different from the Elohim group. And I just want to read one paragraph. You'll see they're more... The way that I've understood it, learned to understand it, is the Elohim group is more powerful. They're more adept at sending huge gobs of energy into this realm from the center of the universe and in miracles and whatever else. The Ra group is wiser. Not exactly wiser. That's not fair to say. The Elohim has watched this planet and observes it from their space, and they understand pain because they could become one with someone that's in pain and feel the pain. And then they go back and there's no more pain. But the difference with the Ra group is they got stuck here, and many of you understand how it feels to be stuck here and being in pain and not finding a way out. And that's part of the nature of this realm. So the Ra group understands that experience of being stuck here. And let me see here. I'll just give you... So that's why they could talk through Edgar Cayce and they could know all these remedies, because they had bodies for, millions of years, hundreds of thousands of years. They went through many, many, many lifetimes. So they could tap into all the remedies that ever worked for something that they had used in previous times. Now, I'll read a little thing here from The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. There are so many things. There's a whole chapter on how television corrupts you. There's a chapter on attitudes and emotions. And why should you struggle with facts and information when the deeper knowledge comes from diligent inner seeking and meditation? Why should you resist your musical work when it is one of the highest affections for the Creator that you are capable of expressing? Why indeed does it seem impossible to believe that you truly are one with Father, Mother, God, that your spirit exists as an infinite vibration, reverberation throughout the universe? These concepts are difficult to assimilate for the fact that the physical world is so conducive to the belief that that is all there is. We understand the conundrum that is planted before you, as you must deal with the realities of study and of work and of adult responsibility, while at the same time maintaining a station that allows you to hold on to your awareness in a form that is much more streamlined than what you may otherwise want. That's an example of the Ra group in The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. And there's many little triggers. It's one of those things that if you read it right, you can read it a number of times because it's so deep. It will start opening little clicks in you of awareness. And returnofedgar.com. Now, we're going over, but they said we could go over a little bit today. that they don't have a show on after us. And Daphne, are you there? Let's see.
I am here.
You know, I was thinking, between you and Terry, Terry, if we were going to bring through a message from the Raw Group, you think it should be you or Daphne? Or both?
I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you what.
I...
Why don't we... Would you like to bring through a message from the Raw Group, Daphne?
I can, yeah.
Now, let me just say, whatever voice we hear, we're going to leave this as this is what identifies themselves as the Raw Group. We can't prove that it's the Raw Group. So we are going to let you decide. But they say they're the Raw Group. We've asked them questions. And as you know, in this crazy experience that we're sharing so transparently with you all, we have two groups, the Elohim group and the Ra group, because we've tuned into both of their frequencies, and we've tuned into the Elohim group because of Daphne's ability to tune into that group, which then rubbed off on Terry, and we tuned into the Ra group because of my study of Edgar Cayce, my background with the Ra group. You know, there's something else that we have online called the Egyptian Connection, which I recommend you go to that page. It's called egypt.intelligent-infinity.com. I hope that's the right page. And it tells the story that seems to indicate that I might have been that Egyptian pharaoh. So it's a four-hour workshop with a workbook. And if you're the kind of person that likes to unfold and prove things to yourself, and it's good that you are that. These are things you need to read because it grounds the energy. Many of the readings that we're doing now with Daphne, they're saying, read our archives, read the spirit channels, absorb this stuff, because it's the way that you integrate it so you can not just have this entertaining experience of our conference calls, but it becomes part of your life. In a way that's experiential, where you start to realize you were never alone, you were never alienated, it's an illusion of this realm, you are always part of all that is. And this has been a temporary illusion that you've come into that you're not, and to awaken to that is a phenomenal experience to have in this realm. So I'm going to call in the light. I think, you know, both Terry and Daphne at different times have both had the Ra group come through. And remember, when we say the Ra group, we try to understand this. It would be like there's this huge group soul with perhaps billions of beings, and they have councils and sub-councils, and they're made of individuals like you and me. They're not, especially the Ra group. And depending on who's channeling, they're going to access a different portion of this group. It's going to feel different. So, but you'll probably notice a difference when we just have Ra as opposed to Ra-An, which was a combination of Elohim and Ra. The Father, Mother, God, we ask for the presence of the light to surround and protect each person here, and any negativity be taken to the highest realms of light and transmuted for the highest good of all concerned. We see ourselves in the flow of energy radiating from the center of the universe, through the galaxies, through the Milky Way, through the solar system, through the outer energy fields of planet Earth, through our bodies, and into the center of the Earth. And right now, we invoke the group energy connection, while maintaining the sovereign integrity of our souls. And we invite those sources that are positive, service to others, honoring the law of one, to join with us. And we create a protected space that only the positive has access to. And anything not of that nature must leave now. And we request, if our sources go along with it, the presence of at least the emphasis on a communication from the Ra group and perhaps any of their comments on anything we just reviewed.
Okay, when they're asking you, when you make your affirmation, make it in a declarative, must leave now.
Okay. We ask that anything that's negative must leave now.
Thank you. One moment, please. We greet you in the love light of the one infinite creator. You have accessed the Ra frequency. Have you questions for us this evening?
We'd like to ask for anything that you would like to share with all those listening tonight about the history we just spoke of, anything that I said that was incorrect, and I'm sure everyone wants to know how to access the frequency of the Ra group in this period of transformation.
We are heartened at your query. There are many interesting aspects you have covered in the historical program of this evening, and it is indeed a very interesting tapestry along the time-space lines of continuum, a beautiful tapestry which weaves the different parts, the different characters, the different timelines, the different essences, the different soul contracts, which have served one with another to make a complete orchestration through the time-space continuum of that which has come to be rendered as service in the present time. You spoke of the various connections and the various affinities with certain frequency. We would serve to, from our perspective, make some comments. The first being that the differences you observe between the essence Daphne and the essence Terry are primarily, from our perspective, a Ra and Elohim frequency differential. The authoritarian, the definitive scientific nature of the entity Daphne stems from a deep and long affiliation with the Ra frequencies, more so than the Elohim frequencies. The affiliation which the Terry carries is more of the Elohim nature, although both, at this point in their soul stream and consciousness, are able to braid and combine the frequencies as they are both on the master track of mastering this incarnational influence. It is also interesting that historically speaking, the entity Daphne, when she met her present husband of this lifetime, upon meeting him, the first question she asked was, "Do you know who Edgar Cayce is?" Not knowing how to pronounce C-A-Y-C-E. Her husband, Robert, corrected her and said, "It is Cayce, or the man who would become her husband." there is also photographs which Wynn did not mention in this evening's broadcast, in which the entity Robert very strongly resembled the photograph of this individual, playing yet another historical part. And yet again, in 1987, Daphne was with Robert in Virginia Beach, Virginia. She was pregnant and experienced a miscarriage. Had she not experienced the miscarriage, she would not be doing this work now. She would have opted to stay with family and family obligations. So it is interesting from our perspective to see how the interplay of various personalities, various meetings, various, quote, chances, confluences of information, time, event, and circumstance combine. We can influence, but ultimately we cannot decide the life course of any particular person, nor the outcome of any particular event. We have hopes. We see possibilities. We see trajectories. We see probability vortices. And yet, we never know for certain. Have you other questions?
In the initial experience of the one known as David Wilcock, there was that famous first prediction where you predicted that he was going to get a ticket on a certain day at a certain time. What are the mechanisms where you could see that with such certainty?
Again, there is no definitive knowing. There is only probability. And at that point, there had been a confluence of various factors whereby there was an extremely high likelihood that he would be in a time and a place whereby the confluence of factors would make for a highly probable outcome of the car being parked at a place where he would overrun the meter. And knowing the route of the police officer, we ascertained that most highly probably the vehicle would be ticketed. And we knew a piece of paper representing your ticket structure would most likely come out of that. Again, it is probability. It is not definitive knowing.
Thank you. Well, I think that how would you look at what we're doing now in this group with all these people that are suddenly paying attention to us and being introduced to the Ra group and the Elohim group, and how can they make the most of it?
We would say from our perspective that to unite oneself with the field of the Ra is to unite oneself with divine will, with the will of the Godhead, with the will of Source. It is the creational aspect of the divine engine. It is the charge. It is the thrust. It is the forcible movement through time and space. It is the power which gets things done. To call on the Ra is to call on the force which makes things go. We do not know if this has answered your query.
Well, at different times it was indicated that the Ra group was a more aligning in the dualistic aspect to the male principle and the Elohim to the female principle. So the Ra group is the active force for transformation in this realm. Could we say that? That has been the way you've interacted with us throughout our history.
This is affirmative.
And so, as people are wanting to make connection, then on some level, if they do a thrusting act in this realm, that they would get the Ra group's assistance, as long as their motivations were of high service and for the highest good of all concerned. Could we say that?
We would say that much had to do with intention, and that much has to do with focus. In order to generate power in this realm, one must couple emotion, passion, with focus. In that way, one generates a powerful thrust.
Emotion, power, and focus. I just wanted to repeat that. Emotion, power, and focus, which creates the energy for transformation. Yes?
Affirmative.
Yes. And so, what is the wisdom you would impart to all these people that are listening to us right now, that in their hearts they would like to access this? What's their next step?
Consistency and practice. One must every day, no matter how small a step, keep moving forward. It does not matter if one is tired. It does not matter if one is frustrated. It does not matter if one does not understand. One can keep asking. If one does one small step, be it a continuous writing in one's journal, a continuous time for reflection, it can be a quiet walk, a quiet sitting in the garden, but persistence. It is the persistence which makes an etheric track. It is the persistence and the discipline which makes an etheric beacon, an etheric calling, an etheric template. And that is what we can see. If one makes a half-hearted notion of connectivity, it is nothing. But if one does this day in, day out, for weeks and for months, there is an imprint which is left in the ethers. And then this is joined by like-minded others. When one joins in community such as this one, it is magnified 100 and then 1,000 times more. Consistency, focus, practice. It is like anything. You must learn to use your spiritual muscle. It is like learning to swim, learning to walk, learning to use new software on your internet. It is practice. In your 3D, it is all the time practice. Take it one day at a time. It shall come. Consistency, focus, practice.
Thank you. I think that will be my questions for tonight. And I just want to thank you for being connected to our group, working with us, being available. And at different times, we in the future, we will focus on bringing through the wisdom and the guidance
of the Ra group. And I wanted to again mention that reading the materials, reading the Carlo Ruckert materials, the Ra Law of One, I really suggest that to everybody. You can go do a search. It's available for free online, all four books. Carlo Ruckert was so dedicated to this that even though her books are published, she gives away her PDFs free. And also the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. You know, we are integrating things which are new, strange, unusual, and all of you are part of, how can I say that, integrating it into your own lives. And just say, do you have any closing words for us before we end this transmission?
The Ruckert material is foundational. It is as the base of a pyramid. With the work you, Mr. Nguyen, are bringing in with the Daphne and the Terry, you are building on a foundation which has been brought in by the Ra material. What you are doing is attempting to integrate the Ra wisdom with the holographic architectonics of the celestial Elohim realm during the time of the shift. We are all part and parcel of a greater whole, bringing in the Trinitarian consciousness, the Christed consciousness, the triune three-pointed consciousness of the Christed vibration, leading to greater wisdom, compassion, and discernment. We would suggest and encourage all to become spiritual warriors and to take courage in your spiritual convictions by allowing yourselves to have a strong foundation and to become disciplined in your thoughts and to become disciplined in your studies. Metaphysical law is not a mamby-pamby affair. It is not a dilettantish affair, and it is not something to be played with lightly. It is a very serious responsibility. Not that there is not joy and not fun. These things can be had. But it is not a responsibility to be taken lightly. We are very honored to work with you. We send you many blessings.
Yes,
I'm here.
I think we should close it with that message, that transmission through Daphne.
Yes, that's right.
Okay. So, I thank you all for being here and listening. And that was, I know I wanted to do one thing. I wanted to take a moment for healing. And this is what we do on our Sunday calls. All of those of you who are wanting to make a connection, wanting to feel the energies, take a moment and shut your eyes. And we're going to follow the way the Ra group suggests this through David Wilcock, and that is to send the energy up through our crown chakra, the top of our heads, and send it to the higher realms. Send it to the Ra group and the Elohim group. And ask that they send it back down to you in vibrations of love, light, that you can feel and move that energy through your body and direct it to where you need healing. Direct it to who you know that needs healing. And healing can be healing of disease, it could be healing of patterns that keep you contracted and feeling unworthy. It can be healing for people you care about, that you have an energetic connection with. And understand, you're part of the process. When you're part of the process, they can help. It's not done to you. It's done with you. And we take this moment and do a prayer for the entire planet that this work and work like this can perpetuate itself and touch all those people who are looking, hungry, afraid, don't know what's going on, for their highest goods. On that note, I'm going to stop our recording. We thank all those people listening to the replays. Thank you all for being here. And how do I stop this? Let me see. That's not working. Hang on a second. We'll figure it out. Hang on a second. I haven't figured out how to stop the recording yet, so, but we did well. Today was a good call, and let's see. Is the conference line here? Jeez, I think we lost it. Okay, I will have to check back in. We'll see you all. We're on BBS next week. Thank you.